Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Networking Diva Hour radio show, always live, always heard worldwide.
Hello, listeners. It's not live today. We're doing a replay since this is the 314th day of the year, and we've had over 600 mass shootings. We felt as we close out our year soon that this is needed to be heard again. So please sit back. Ignore the announcements on this recorded play. The only announcement I have today is November 10th. This weekend is Veterans Day. Don't forget your veterans. And there's a holiday craft show at the Colorado Springs Event Center tomorrow from 9 to 3. And sit back and enjoy the replay. Take notes. Or listen to it over and over when it's in the archives. But thank you for taking a moment for this very important replay that we have to put out yet again.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
We're having trouble getting it to play. It's scheduled to go on, but of course we're going to have trouble today because I want it to play. So if you're listening, be patient, trying to get the download to play. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoy this rerun that is very needed right now before the school year starts. Sit back and enjoy.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Networking Diva Hour radio show, always live, always heard worldwide.
Now the replay.
Hello, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the Networking Diva Hour today, and always a special thanks to the new listeners out there. Welcome. I'm your host, Janice Carlson, for the next hour and every Friday morning here live on Blog Talk Radio. We are so happy each week to bring this program to you and give many tips on the do's and don'ts from networking, current events, to being the best that you can be, and all business information in between. We hope to guide you to success and to help put your best foot forward professionally, financially, and effectively. We look forward to your emails, your chats, your posts, your tweets. You can reach us in the chat room or send me an email at host@thenetworkingdivahour.com, and we will answer your questions to the best of our ability and help lead you to success. I say to you every week, if you're always networking, when are you working your business? So grab a latte and sit back and enjoy the show.
And this is a very special show today out of our normal realm because of everything that's been happening in America with these mass shootings. So I have a wonderful quote from Josephine Baker in reference to today's show also. And she stated, you must get an education. You must go to school. And you must learn to protect yourself. And you must learn to protect yourself with the pen and not the gun. I love that quote. That is a perfect quote for today's special presentation on shootings in America. And we have a great guest, Daniel, and I hope I'm saying his name right, Delzminski, Safety and Security, and he will be on here shortly. But you know I always like to start the show with my sponsors that have made it possible as we celebrate 10 years on the air. And they are Kathy Bilkus, your Tax Lady Accounting Services, the Center of Gratitude Radio Show with Dr. Johnny Bergstrom out of Jupiter, Florida, Shield 616, Protecting Our Protectors, the Colorado Springs Over 50.com business app, the Colorado Springs Conservatory, and our brand new sponsor, Jack Seasoning, that I have been talking about for a while. And you will hear they'll debut their new commercial ad when we go to break. And it's the only seasoning you'll ever need. So my announcements are, as you know, the Colorado Springs Conservatory, the Wine Festival, celebrating the Northern Wines of Italy, starts the first week in March. They have a four-day event. But we have tickets, and I'm going to announce the ticket winners for the Grand Tasting at the Broadmoor Hall on March 3rd, Friday night at 7 o'clock. I'm very excited to see you all there. And the winners that we have, I'm going to list them to you. They are Ed Peterson, producer. Myself is going. But Heather Bergen, Yvonne Dominez, I hope I'm saying her name right, Alec Lang, Delilah Levito, Tiffany and Patches Magdaleno, and Mike Burwell. And we do have another winner, but he hasn't confirmed yet, or she hasn't confirmed yet. There's somebody that hasn't confirmed yet, and we will get that out to you. But congratulations on entering this wonderful contest to go to the Grand Tasting. And it's a wonderful date night. If there's still tickets available, you know, go online to the Colorado Springs Conservatory or look at our logo that's passing through right now as we speak on the radio. With the slideshow, you'll have information there where to go to get your ticket. So congratulations again to our winners, and thank you all for entering and liking the page and buying tickets and buying saving the room, overnight room at the Broadmoor at their special discounts. It's going to be a fabulous, fabulous night. So today, like I said, we have a very special presentation. As you know, every day, more than once a day, there has been news about mass shootings, school shootings. You know, today is the 55th day of 2023, and there has been, I hope you're sitting down, 2,708 people murdered in gun violence in those 55 days. Something's not right, people. Something's not right. This is astronomical numbers that they announced for the school, not just school shootings. There was a shooting yesterday in Orlando, Florida. Some person killed a woman, then the news crew and the police came out, and he shot at them, killing one of the news crew, putting another one in the hospital, went into a home for no reason, shot the mother, and killed a 9-year-old little girl. And the mother is in critical condition. For no reason, 19 years old, the shooter is. So we have to do something. So when I heard from Daniel, I knew I had to put him on the air I knew we had to make an exception and do a special show. What I didn't know is this was the perfect time to do it when we picked this date because of everything that has happened the last 2 weeks alone. So I hope you're prepared to listen to some of this show. If you have to run out, don't forget you can always go in after the show. The live show that we're doing right now has ended, and you can go into Blog Talk Radio, the Networking Diva Hour, at your convenience and listen to it at your convenience, slow it down, repeat it, take notes, but we ask you to share it with a friend or someone who might need to hear this, or post it on your social media to get this information out, because he's going to talk about safety and security, mostly in schools. But he has such an array on his bio that I'm not going to be able to read it all, but you're definitely going to want to hear from Daniel. And he wrote the book, The First 5 Minutes, that is on Amazon today. So definitely stay tuned if you can. And again, if you can't, you could always play it back. But we do ask that you share it with a friend. So those are the only announcements I have, other than if you or someone you know is considering suicide, please contact the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at #988. Please, or call them at 1-800-273-8255, because they are always ready to hear from you or anyone else that might be showing signs of mental health problems. We wanted to get that out there. What I'm going to do now is just read a little bit from Entrepreneur Magazine on the plan for emergencies and how to respond, and then here shortly we're going to go to break, and then Daniel will be on with his information, and we want to get as much information as we can, so we are limiting the questions. They will be coming in from my assistant in reference to what Daniel will be talking to at that time, and we will have him answer the best to his ability on some of the questions that might come in. But plan for emergencies and know how to respond. This is so important in today's day and age. You know, families and communities expect schools to keep their children safe from a range of emergency events like crime, natural disasters, bullying, accidents. You know, emergencies can happen at any time, and planning for different emergencies can be challenging for schools. A key component of emergency planning is creating an emergency operations plan, school EOP, or a document that outlines how a school will prepare, respond, and recover from an emergency. Every district or school should develop and implement comprehensive school EOP that's described the actions that students, teachers, and school staff should take before, during, and after emergency events. And everyone should have a common understanding of what will be expected of them. Any reduction of time between the beginning and the end of an incident can save lives. And yes, I know, a lot of people are just rolling their eyes saying, why does my child have to go through such training in school? You know, I'm not too young, but when I was in school, we didn't have this many, many years ago, but we did have training on air raids and, you know, with the war and everything else. So there's always something. And this is a war. This is a war of shootings, these mass shootings, regardless if they're in school or if they're in supermarkets. I mean, you have to be on guard these days because of the mental health crisis in this country. So an important part of emergency planning, training teachers, staff, and faculty about the policies, procedures, roles, and responsibilities in their school's EOP. It also gives them the information they need to train their students on emergency procedures. Tabletop exercises allow schools to discuss their plans, policies, and procedures in an emergency scenario. Drills provide everyone with a chance to practice the actions they will take before, during, and after an emergency. Training and exercises are an essential component of school safety plans. You know, one of my grandsons works at a grocery store, and even they do training these days of how to protect themselves, to protect the customers if there's ever any violence, as far as grocery stores, churches, especially churches too now today. So these are important facts to know. Schools are also continuously reacting to incidents. Most incidents are small, but some events like tragic acts of violence have a larger impact and may disrupt the worldview of students, staff, and family members. Schools and districts can plan for how they will recover from incidents before they occur, which can make the recovering process quicker and more effective. To address the wide range of needs that are linked to the aftermath of incidents at school, safety teams should ask themselves questions like, how do we address the counseling needs of students, staff, and families? Who has the authority to close and reopen the school? Does the school know how to reunify parents and students? Having answers to these questions can help schools rebound more quickly. Districts and schools should also have an overall strategy for academic, physical, and emotional recovery, which includes knowing what to do and how to support the community. Successful recovery addresses the needs that emerge after an incident, and having a plan can mean recovery is more effective and timely. You know, they ask how to prevent and mitigate targeted violence incidents. Targeted violence refers to violence that is premeditated and directed at specific individuals, groups, or locations like schools, churches, grocery stores, anywhere. Perpetrators select their targets to achieve specific motives, such as the result of a grievance or make a political or ideologic statement. Targeted violence is distinct from violence that is impulsive, random, or spontaneous, and is often distinguished by pre-attack behaviors that suggest violence as a possible outcome. Those behaviors, if identified and addressed, can reduce the likelihood of a targeted violence incident at your school. The best practice for preventing targeted school violence is through the use of a multidisciplinary school threat assessment team comprised of school staff tasked to identify, assess, and intervene with students who may pose a risk of harm to themselves or others. And you will hear more about that when Daniel is on. Schools can work to prepare the potential acts of targeted violence by improving their campuses' physical security and involving school personnel who are trained to prevent, recognize, and respond to threats of violence, as well as implementing other violence prevention strategies. Physical security measures can mitigate threats and reduce the amount of harm inflicted in incidents occur. Conducting a site assessment and developing building security plans can identify existing vulnerabilities and enhance overall school security.
How do you make schools safer by improving access to mental health services? That's the big thing, the mental health services. Students often come to school with complex physical and mental health concerns or social service needs. Access to mental health services helps to create a positive school climate, prevents worsening of mental health conditions, and leads to better outcome of students. Mental health challenges are common among students. According to the National Research Council and Institute of Medicine, up to 1 in 5 children living in the U.S. experience a mental disorder every year. Symptoms often start in early childhood, although some may develop during the teenage years. By supporting students who are experiencing mental health challenges, schools can help foster a sense of safety and promote better academic and behavioral outcomes. Providing access to mental health services can reduce mental, emotional, and behavioral difficulties with students at risk. Schools and districts should implement social, emotional, and behavioral support systems to create a climate that supports and responds to student behavior. School leaders can make character development a priority by supporting practices in the classroom and school, as well as collaborating with families and community organizations. This is so important and such a very important topic. As I said, years ago, we didn't have this kind of training in schools. We didn't need to. But we did need training of some other kinds. Across the South, there's training on if a hurricane or a tornado or wherever you live, you know, damages or you're stuck in the building. I mean, there's training for everything to keep students safe. But the most important thing, unfortunately, in today's day and age is these mass shootings. I have nothing to say on gun control. I do not know anything about it. I don't know what they can do. You know, I just know that it's totally out of hand for these young people. What did we hear a few weeks ago? That a 6-year-old boy took his parents' gun to school and shot a teacher he didn't like. 6 years old. Come on, people. There's got to be some way this could be avoided. There's got to be some way that the average person can help, regardless if you have children in school or whatever, or in college. Even college dorms are being threatened, as we've seen, maybe not with guns, but violence for sure, killing of those 4 college students not too long ago. You know, there's got to be something that we can do. So we have to read, listen, and participate in everything that we can do in order to try to help our country. So that's my soapbox. In a moment, we'll hear from this wonderful guest today. But first, we're going to take a short break, and then we'll be back. I'll read most of his bio because it's so extensive. We don't have time for all of it, but we'll highlight it. And then we'll hear from Daniel. This is your host, Janice Carlson, and we will be right back. I do promise you that we will be right back.
Tax laws have changed again this year, so see what the team at Nelson & Company, Katie, Becky, and Allie, can do for you. They offer comprehensive life events planning, business tax, investment strategies, and specialize in providing rapid, high-quality financial services. All clients are treated with courtesy and integrity, and we guarantee efficient, honest financial services. Contact the team at Nelson & Company at 719-444-0222 or online at nelsonandcompanycpa.com. Our firm is referral only, and we cannot accept walk-in meetings.
Do you often find yourself struggling to find the joy in every day? Would you like to feel as good as you know you should? The daily struggle to find joy and happiness is shared by hundreds of millions of people around the world, and you don't have to be among them any longer. Hi, I'm the gratitude Dr. Johnny Bergstrom. For years, I struggled to find the joy that I knew I should feel, and after years of heartache and unhappiness, I treated my life with gratitude, and gratitude changed everything. I can coach you to heal your life with gratitude. Find the Center of Gratitude radio show and the Gratitude Doctor podcast, and in 15 minutes or less, you'll be well on your way to that joyful feeling with gratitude.
ColoradoSpringsOver50.com is a newly designed online member directory for businesses and organizations that provide products and services for the over 50 population. The directory features your own marketing landing page, electronic business card, event postings, member page, activity analysis, and more. So text the word CSOver50, that is CSOVER50, to 72727. And visit our website to see other features and benefits. Stop by online today at ColoradoSpringsOver50.com or text to receive our electronic business card. Colorado Springs Over 50, the best is yet to come.
Jack seasoning is a classic Midwest flavor used for all things bland that needs just a little shake to bring out the goodness. Their unique flavor is subtle, not hot or exotic. From meats, vegetables, and eggs to Bloody Marys, this three-generation-old blend gives the satisfying feeling of home. Jack seasoning will make you a grill master, too. Shake once for flavor, twice for extreme, and three times for crazy. Visit our website at Jack, that's J-A-K, seasoning.com, to order and see recipes. Jack seasoning turns a cook into a chef with one shake.
The 31st Annual Wine Festival of Colorado Springs presents The Wines of Northern Italy, March 2nd through the 4th, benefiting the Colorado Springs Conservatory. Join a Colorado Springs celebration of wine history and philanthropy, 31 years in the making. Check out the annual Wine Festival of Colorado Springs. For more information and tickets, reach out to winefestivalofcoloradosprings@gmail.com. For sponsorship information and opportunities, please email Scott Marble at smarble@csconservatory.org.
Accounting can be one of the most time-consuming aspects of operating a small business, but it is paramount to the success of your business, especially since 2021. The work can be extremely overwhelming for business owners who lack the time, knowledge, and skills to properly handle their accounts. Your Tax Lady LLC Accounting Service utilizes their knowledge and experience to professionally handle your small business accounting needs. They are also equipped to remotely handle most small business needs nationwide and welcome you to contact them for a consultation. Your Tax Lady, Kathy Bilkis, is an enrolled agent and America's tax expert working for you for over 40 plus years. Call Your Tax Lady today at 719-548-4924 or online at taxladyllc.com. Your Tax Lady continues to check your bottom line so the government still doesn't get it all.
Now back to the Networking Diva Hour with your host, Janice Carlson.
Thank you, audience, for taking a moment to listen to the sponsors that have made this show possible and new sponsors that we're welcoming as we celebrate 10 years on the air. I want to talk a little bit about my special guest today, and I hope I'm pronouncing his name right. If not, he'll correct me. His name is Daniel Delsnesky. He's a retired Lieutenant U.S. Secret Service, former coordinator, Emergency Management, Safety and Security at Pinellas County Schools. Daniel started his education at Southern Illinois University, majoring in criminal justice. After working in a variety of jobs, he decided to apply to the Uniform Division of the United States Secret Service. His career highlights: over 24 years with the United States Secret Service, certified as a crime scene search technician, special operation officer, the White House historical tours, standardized school emergency plans, the way active shooter drills should be run, attending the national seminars and trainings, active shooter scenarios, and certification through CPTED, which is crime prevention through environmental design, kept him up to date on all aspects of school safety. His personal mission is to educate people within organizations about what to do in an emergency situation, such as an active shooter, fire, or bomb threat. His background and experience is an invaluable tool to train people and help increase their confidence in responding to a threat. Daniel states, "It is always better to be proactive and prepared in advance for a situation that may occur." Please help me welcome to today's show, a special presentation. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Janice. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you. And please pronounce your last name. I'm sure I killed it.
You were good. You were close. It's Deluzneski. You just pronounced all the letters. It's very odd to see a D and an L together, and someone thinks it's silent. But you just pronounced all the letters, Deluzneski.
Okay. Thank you. And I apologize for that.
No problem.
But we are so excited, Daniel, and I could not read your entire history and your career highlights and all of your bio because we don't have that much time. But
sure.
It is so impressive that, and as I said earlier, I don't know if you heard part of the show earlier, how important and how we pick this date to have you on, what's
mm-hmm.
been happening. As I mentioned, I heard, and I hope I'm quoting correctly, today is the 55th day of 2023, and there already has been over 2,000 people murdered in gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
you know, and not all schools, you know, just
right.
like yesterday, it wasn't a school at Orlando, Florida. But
right.
what can you give us? What information do you have that can help us know more about this and the schools, what they need to know?
Well, I tell you, I've been doing this for a number of years, and I actually, when I worked for the county, was very fortunate that I was given some autonomy and changing some things around. And we have to remember back then, we're talking now, I worked there probably 8 years ago, that we didn't have fencing. We didn't have locks on the doors. We didn't have cameras. I mean, there are still a lot of places around the country that do not have locks on their doors and don't have cameras. So my whole thing is there's a simple, easy, practical way that doesn't cost very much to keep yourself safe. We don't need what's happening recently, as I consider a knee-jerk reaction, of getting metal detectors, which are millions and millions of dollars in order for something that's using technology. A lot of my peers say the same thing, that technology is not going to get us past this point. It takes human input in order to make our schools safe. You can have this technology, but without the human input, there's always something that's going to happen. There's always something that's going to be amiss. So it's better to just use human input, use the money that you have for things that are more simple, a lock on a classroom door, camera system, SROs in the schools, having police officers actually in the schools. I know I get pushback on that, but it's already
mm-hmm.
been proven that when you take these officers out of the schools, the violence, the threats, the bullying, it just increases exponentially. So as we've seen, and what's very topical now, and we can talk about things now because usually when I make these presentations, always something either changes or something new comes out. And the newest things we're seeing is, number one, more guns in these schools. We've just recently seen the shooting in an elementary school of a six-year-old,
mm-hmm.
of a teacher, and just recently another gun showed up in an elementary school. The other thing we're seeing is these swatting events. And what happens is they're very hard to find out who's calling these things in. But the part that I get frustrated with is when these threats are called in, which basically is a 911 call. We'll call in the police. Hey, there's a shooting going on at XYZ High School. There's 10 people dead. And the police immediately go to the schools, and it just creates a lot of chaos because the police will show up, and the school's like, what are you talking about? There's nothing here. So these hoaxes usually jump from state to state, and they usually stay within a certain region. But my thing is, look, if you're going to call 911 into a police station, obviously with my law enforcement background, I pretty much know what I'm talking about. Your next step, call the school. And there usually is a liaison or a direct connection to that school within that region to look at the cameras, to call them immediately. I got nothing. There's nothing going on. We don't need to respond. It's okay to someone to go there, but don't go what they call code one with lights and sirens and show up. And gangbusters, we're going to go in and we're just going to start shooting away. But the thing of it is, take a breath. It's probably a hoax. Maybe it's not, but we're going to check it out. We're going to call. We're going to find out. So that's what's being topical, what's going on now. Back to the reason I wrote my book. It's called The First 5 Minutes, and the reason for that is the FBI did their data, and they said, look, most, and I don't say all, but on average, every school shooting event takes between 3 to 5 minutes until it's done. In fact, the first 30 seconds is when all chaos breaks loose. So that's the reason I titled it that way. It's a very short, practical book. It's a guidebook. It's not a 200-page administrative manual to go through. It's easy reading, and I made it for our teachers and administrators. However, most teachers and administrators that I've talked to have said, look, we're locked in. The state says this is what we have to do, or the county, or the school board says, this is how we're supposed to run things. Okay, fine. As long as you feel comfortable with that, that's fine. But what I do is, look, let's get back to the parents. As you know, parents have challenged school boards with things, with teachings that are going on, and I want parents also to show up at school boards and talk about the safety of their children. And they're the ones who should be pushing this. They should be pushing the school boards and especially their legislature, saying, hey, look, we do fire drills once a month. We've done fire drills hundreds of years. And when is the last time someone died in a fire in a school? It's hundreds of years ago. And we do that every month with our active shooter or what they call lockdown drills at these schools. They're done maybe every quarter, sometimes less than that. It should be flipped around. We should be doing these once a month. Now, again, Janice, I'm probably your audience is going to say, wait a minute. Okay. I don't want my child to go through these drills every month because they just get anxious. It just bothers them. Most of these drills can be run certain ways where you're not going to make a child anxious or make them fear that something is about to happen. I remember I'm dating myself, but when I was a child, we had the Cuban Missile Crisis going on, and we would come out into the hallway and basically duck and cover. You'd sit against a wall. You'd cover
and
your
I
head
mentioned
up.
That, and, Daniel, on my first part of the show, that, and I dated myself, that we didn't have these drills for gun violence, but I remember having to go into the hall or hiding under our desk, you know, blacking out the windows, you know. So there was always something. And my parents never complained about they didn't want me to go through that. But this is done, I think, a little more often than we did that.
Yes, right. And my other point is from writing the book is many people out there will speak for law enforcement. They'll speak for school administrators. They'll speak for the school board. Very few people will speak for the teachers. What's happening to these teachers? These teachers have the toughest job in the world. And I was law enforcement, which is pretty darn tough. But I'm telling you, I could not go in and teach what's happening now because not only are they under pressure to, you know, obviously teach their kids and get their class grade and school grade up to a certain level because here in Florida, it's A, B, C, D, E, F. And if you're in a D or F school, oh, boy, the pressure is on. But now you've got 20, 25, sometimes 30 children in these classes, and I'm concentrated on elementary schools because that's where we have the most of our schools is elementary schools. You're dealing with these little children who, as we found out with Uvalde, as we found out with Sandy Hook, not that they're targeting elementary schools, but that seems to be the what's happening here. I know Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was a high school. That was horrific also. But these elementary school children, we've got what's happening is, I'll back up a little bit. But when we do these drills, some places will say, you know what, let's give the teacher the option. They can either stay in their classroom, lock the door, close everything up, or we'll give them the option where they can run out of the school. I'm sorry, but if I'm a teacher and I've got 25 to 30 first graders, second graders, whatever, I'm in no way going to take these kids outside of my classroom and try to escape a shooter. Well, I have no idea where they're at because, number one, most of these kids have probably learned from their parents, hey, not, you listen to the teacher. But some of these kids are going to be like, hey, my daddy said, I stay here. I don't go anywhere when there's a shooting going on. So you've got that issue, but how are you going to handle 25, 30 children going out into a horrific situation where they're going to hear the worst sound they've ever heard? They're going to see things you don't want them to see. My whole thing is, and what's backed up by data, what's backed up by my peers, what's backed up by the National Psychologist Association, by the Special Officer Association, you just lock down. And the easiest thing to do, which I say in the book, is your classroom door should be already closed and locked during school time. So that's one less step you have to do. You close the little window in the classroom. You close all the blinds. You turn the lights off. You sit very quietly in the corner away from the window. You silence your cell phone, and you're going to wait till help arrives. Now, you're going to hear some bad stuff. Help is on the way. They're coming. It may seem like it takes them hours to get there, but they're coming. There's only been one case where a shooter came in and broke through a locked door. But they actually didn't break through the locked door. They tried to break through the locked door. This was on a tribal reservation. They broke through a window, which was next to the door. So a locked door has not been broken by an active shooter. The reason for that is it takes too long. Most of these doors are pretty solid doors, and the locks are pretty solid. They want easy victims. So lockdown is your best option, is the only option, and you just stay in there and keep yourself safe. So I tell teachers, look, that's what you want the confidence to do, and you want to drill that in your head. You have to get into a different mode. You have to. You have to now go into this protective mode, and it's just like a light switch. And that's why I ask for more training and more drilling. However, Janice, I was frustrated because, and I don't mean to chuckle, you would have conferences, basically 2 or 3 day conferences with teachers and administrators. I was fortunate enough to probably get 45 minutes out of that for the entire year. That is just absolutely ridiculous. I'm not going to train someone, in 45 minutes to do something that's so horrific, that's so important. It has to be something where there's continually training, continually drilling, and pretty much this will become rote. I like to say in the book is what's called implicit memory, which basically is like tying your shoes, putting a seatbelt on, holding your phone, or whatever, which happens basically almost without thinking. You just do it. And how did you do it? I don't know. I just put my seatbelt on. I didn't go through the whole process. So what I tell teachers, administrators, that once you start drilling and training over and over again, it becomes rote, and you have more confidence. You know what to do, and you're going to save your children. The next step is to save yourself. I've had teachers and principals of elementary schools and middle schools tell me, they're my kids, I got to save them. Well, we already know what happened in Sandy Hook. That principal there challenged a shooter, and she got shot dead. So unless you're a gun carrier, which I don't agree with teachers and administrators having guns in the schools anyways, but you want to save yourself first. That's your most important point. You're not going to help anyone if you're injured or if you're shot. You're not going to help any children. You keep yourself safe first, then you can save your children. So those steps and that confidence building that you know what to do, I think works better than anything. Just like the military will tell you, just like my job will tell you, this repetitive training is something that will give you confidence, and I think it would help. So that's part of what I've got in the book. Again, it's a very short book. It's a guidebook. It's something that you can easily read. The other part
of
it,
let's take a quick question before you go on.
Sure.
Just said. And it's from Deanna C. from Chicago, Illinois. And she stated, as you mentioned, one of the cornerstones of school safety and security is definitely physical, doors, locks, security, technology, but there's an equally important softer side to school safety that's related to the culture and climate of schools and communities. But is school safety and security regulated to one or the other?
I tell you, it's a very good question. And the thing of it is, every state, every county has a different set of standards. I don't know if this would work. I wish it was a standardization, whether it's federal or by the state. Most of your legislators now, again, will just do what's politically correct. Hey, we had this shooting here, okay, and that's one reason why I left my job. They took it away from civilians and they gave it to police in the state of Florida. Police now have the access, and what they're the ones who are in charge of school safety. I disagree with that completely. Police are reactive. They are not proactive. I don't care what they're going to tell you if they're proactive. They're reactive, which they should be. But having them now in charge of school safety, no, I disagree with that. So each state has their own set of standards. Each county sometimes has their own set of standards. They go by what the state legislature says. So one or the other. And again, it's usually, again, I'm hoping pushed by parents to say, this is not working, can we do this? However, as you know, most of the knee-jerk stuff that's been happening with parents is, and administrators want to do something. It's that, you know, in quotation marks, we have to do something. So the reason is, hey, we'll put in metal detectors. There we go, problem solved. No, that doesn't solve the problem. So it's something where, sure, Denise, in a perfect world, I wish we could have our kids go to school and say 100% protected, just absolutely no problem. But as we know, if someone is hell-bent on getting into that school and create havoc and create victims, it's going to happen. We can't make our schools prisons. And I've had issues with that also because, again, when I first started, a lot of these schools are wide open. Heck, you remember when we were kids, you walk into school anytime you wanted to. You'd go there and play sports. You'd walk around. There was no one that told you you couldn't go in there. Weekends, wide open. Those days are over. However, we can't make them like prisons, but you need something, at least a minimal amount of preparation and prevention. We had schools where, at elementary schools, you would walk into the lobby, and what they did is they had these half doors, which was, I said, somebody could jump over this. He said, well, we've never had anybody jump over that. Well, guess what? Within a few weeks, someone did. And they had the countertops, which is only maybe, you know, 4 or 5 feet high. And they had a disgruntled parent that was so mad he jumped over the countertop and started attacking some of the staff members. I was like, this is ridiculous. So what I did was I got tempered glass, and I had to put it down from the ceiling down to the countertop. We'd have a little bit of space on the bottom. Now, it made communication, we found that out, it made communication difficult. However, they couldn't jump over the countertop anymore. They couldn't reach through and grab onto the staffer anymore. And it just, it worked. And I can understand because I had parents come in and they were like, oh, my God, it had this claustrophobic feeling like you're in a bank with, you know, all this these walls around. But I said, look, it's either that. You do want to keep the staff protected. And once they're over that counter, they're in. I don't want them in the school. I want them to be accessed to be able to get in. So there's this fine line between available access in an open environment, but you also want to keep it safe. So what I found from most schools, what works is once this mentality is, hey, once these kids are in school, number one, you have only one entrance. One entrance only. There should not be any more than one entrance, that main entrance, where you have an individual that comes in and they were forced into a lobby area, which is locked. Meaning once they're in that lobby area, they've only got one other way to go. They either exit out or they are allowed access in by a buzzer or whatever it is, a key card access, however it is to get them in. Otherwise, what's been happening, and it's still happening today, it happened in Uvalde, you'll have people that will prop doors open. They'll prop them open to have a cigarette. They'll prop them open to get a pizza. They'll prop them open to let their buddies in, and that's where we create issues. Because who's watching these schools? These shooters. And the majority of these shooters are either students or former students. They see what's going on. They observe what's going on. they know what floor is what. They know the whole layout of the school. So if there's a way to prevent that from happening by just a small step of keeping all the doors closed, having one entrance, that helps, because every school safety expert will say it's a layer of prevention. You want to slow them down from getting to a point of creating victims.
Let's take another question here. This
sure.
is interesting. It's from Fran S. from Orlando, Florida. She's saying, do all schools have a team assigned specifically to student safety, and do you teach on safety in grocery stores, churches, and for employers?
If they're asked specifically if I do, yes. Whatever aspects of this can just be, modified for whether it's a church or a grocery store or whatever, if you go into a Walmart or whatever. However, my concentration's been on schools. I still have a 16-year-old in high school, so that's where I'm passionate, most passionate about. And, yes, I know in Florida every school should have a team of security people that they meet at least once a week, at the least once a week. You don't have to do it every day, but at least once a week they will meet, and each team will have a team leader who will then pass on the information to that next individual. So, yes, and I encourage that, to have that kind of input with the staff. And I would say probably by middle school and high school, the students should be involved also. A lot of students now in high school at least will have a student safety council, and they'll get together with teachers and administrators and meet, and the students have just as many suggestions. I made that also mentioned in the book where I remember when I was, again, in high school, we had a team of students that wanted to go into ROTC program or law enforcement or the military, and they volunteered to make the rounds around the school to make sure doors were closed, to make sure someone wasn't there that wasn't supposed to. They're the ones that, you know, and they're not ratting people out. It's your school. You're the ones that need to protect it. So if you have school spirit, yeah, get together with a team of other students and make the rounds, you know, on your study hall or whatever. Walk around and just check out things if you don't have SROs. And in fact, you can, in conjunction with the SROs, go around with them. And that's another thing we bring up, because here in Florida, fortunately, we did get enough money to have special resource officers that are armed in each of our schools, even our elementary schools. So I think that was a big plus. I think it's lessened the bullying, the threats, the violence we see at schools. So I would definitely encourage that over technology.
Okay, let me ask you this then. This is from Jed H. from Washington, D.C. He's stating, to your knowledge, are school administrators and security personnel in other states been trained on crisis management?
I don't have that kind of knowledge. I honestly don't know. I hope they do. I'm sorry that each state, again, has its own standards and will try different things, again, from pressure from parents. They'll again, try different things. Let's try metal detectors. Let's try randomized searches. They'll try different things, which is fine. But my main point is the money being spent. Where is the money going? Is it going to something that eventually doesn't work? I mean, I've got people, my peers on LinkedIn saying, look, I've got a metal detector company that says, yeah, it'll check almost all weapons. Well, what does that mean, almost all weapons? Does it let in knives? Does it let in brass knuckles? Does it let in aluminum baseball bats? I mean, what exactly are you spending the money on? So do your research. Don't make just, again, a knee-jerk reaction saying, hey, I got this grant. I'm going to get these metal detectors, and we're done. No. I know they want to, again, do something, but I disagree that you should just throw money at the problem and in fact, you know, concentrate more on the human side of it, of fixing it that way.
Okay. Let me just take one last question, and then I want you to talk a little more before we end the show today. But this is
sure.
an important question. It's from Taylor G. from Denver, Colorado, and they stated, students who have experienced or witnessed abuse by police officers might feel less safe with the law enforcement presence in the building. So how can our safety plans contribute to the well-being of all our students?
Good question. And that, again, I sympathize. That's been happening in some of these states where the students themselves have argued, along with, you know, what we've happened in the past couple of years with Black Lives Matter and the riots, where a distrust of law enforcement has been, I'm sorry, I get frustrated because I've seen what these SROs can do and how they treat children and how the training that they go through and their relationship with students. And I get it. I get it that, you know, some of these students have been abused or what they think have been bullied or, you know, arrested for the wrong crime by police officers. However, in the long run, the majority of students, and I know the majority of parents, because this was a big issue just about 6 months ago, would rather have the SROs in there and have them talk and sit down and express why they're there and the reasons that they're there and the reasons that they should be there. And I think it just goes a long way, especially with the training now of these people. And look, they got a tough job because a lot of times what's happened, Janice, is the administration for something minor or something that should be handled by the school is turned over to the police officer. Hey, I've got this student doing such and such. Hey, police officer so-and-so, come over and take care of that. And he's like, well, wait a minute. You're putting this on me when it's a school responsibility. So that dynamic has to be straightened out before, you know, we get into a situation where, like you said, the student may feel abused by the police officer when it shouldn't have been escalated to that. What we call it, you know, the de-escalation strategy. And that's, again, what a lot of these SROs bring to the table, and their training is outstanding. And I know in Florida it's outstanding because these men and women do an excellent job.
Yeah. Dan, have you ever just thought about traveling from state to state to teach this and in these schools, or are you just committed to Florida?
No, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. I'm retired, and the only reason I wrote the book after Uvalde, I was so upset with the whole incident that happened there, and I know law enforcement takes a lot of blame, but that whole incident from top down was just horrible. So that's one of the reasons my wife said, you know, you got to vent. You got to put this stuff out there. And that's one of the reasons I wrote the book. I used to have a consulting firm, but it really didn't go anywhere. So, no, I haven't had that opportunity. I haven't really pursued that. Most of the people that are in this business are in it for a business. I don't express that. I mean, I would love to talk in front of an audience. I'm not a real great speaker. I don't have many stories or humorous anecdotes that I can put out there. And a lot of things, Janice, what I found is that it's just repetitive. And there's really nothing new in this space. There isn't. There's nothing new that anyone can come out and say, hey, I've got this great idea. This is what works. And I get a lot of the people on LinkedIn that will come on that have a business in this realm, and I don't want to use the term ambulance chaser, but they kind of put themselves forward that, hey, if you use our system, we would fix what's going on in your school. Or,
there's always somebody that tries to get in with their business. But, you know, what you have to offer, this information is vital, and I'm really, you know, wish it could be sent. But where your book is on Amazon?
Yes, book is on Amazon. It's called The First 5 Minutes, A School Shooting Survival Guide for Administrators and Teachers. And if you type in, I know my last name is an odd one, but if you type in The First 5 Minutes, you should actually see it come up, and you'll see my name. You say, hey, it's that Deleuze Nesky guy. Okay, that's the book I want. And again,
that was our replay from Daniel Dolzinski, and I hope you got a lot out of it. Next week, we'll be back live,
and we'll have Phyllis Levitt. She's the author of America in Therapy, and that is an awesome show you can't miss. But I want to thank Daniel and all my listeners and all the questions today for taking time to listen to the replay, and especially the problem we had in the beginning for a second. So until next week, this is your host, Janice Carlson, and I will see you on the radio.